Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It is 12:47 p.m. That is Pacific Standard Time. Today is January 22nd. Well, we see a sea of red in here today. Just about when we look at some of these stock market futures, some of the currencies and the commodities, they are in negative territory. Oil prices down $1.23. Gold up about $8. Well, there is just one big important point to make, and it's very simple. The Nasdaq, the S&P 500, the Dow Jones, the ASX 200, the TSX in Canada, the vast majority of European indices have lagged all of those, but they all have been rallying since December 26th. A short-term oversold condition was replaced with a short-term overbought condition. Today we saw the first evidence of some resistance starting to come through. Now this move that we saw today is almost exactly the same size as the decline we saw on January 3rd. So downside follow through tomorrow would confirm a peak of near-term significance. And there are a number of factors behind this. The first, of course, is that there are continued trade tensions, that the enthusiasm that had been expressed by markets and investors over the course of the last few weeks at the thought that the USA and China would end their economic hostilities has foundered. Yesterday you had Xi Jinping saying that the Chinese economy faces significant threats. Then, of course, you have what's going on in the UK and in Europe, where you have slowing growth. You have the populist administration in Italy taking pot shots at France. You have the indecision that is going on right now in the UK Parliament with regard to Brexit. And you have in the USA, you have the government shutdown. And so far, Trump has been holding tough. Well, unfortunately, the Democrats in the House, or in control of the House, which is currently closed, they are also holding strong to their guns. So this is certainly an environment that has persisted for longer than many people anticipated, and there doesn't seem to be much sign yet that it is going to end. Well, if it persists much longer, there are going to be a substantial number of federal employees start missing mortgage payments. And in fact, I just got a text message before I started the audio, and it said this: mortgage rates are at a 12-month low. Great time to pull cash out and lower your rate. All credit ratings welcome. Call us today. So I certainly haven't signed up for that. That's the kind of thing that you get when people are very eager to sell you debt. And certainly the bond price has been pulling back over the course of the last 3 weeks, but it was in positive territory in here today, and government bond prices are still above the trend mean, and this is a pretty substantial breakout. And as long as it is holding above the trend mean, we can give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. I think if we're going to look at that, the weekly chart on government bond prices, we really should be looking at the weekly chart in terms of the stock market too. And when we look at the trend for the stock market, well, we're basically being presented with a significant loss of uptrend consistency. We did have some evidence of acceleration at the end of 2017. There was a failed upside break in September, October. We had a massive reaction against the prevailing trend. Now we have had a reversion re-rally back towards the region of the trend mean, and today was the first evidence that resistance has been encountered. So now there is a big question, and the extent of to which these markets can hold the lows put in on December 26th is going to be the arbiter between whether this is a big medium-term correction or whether we're going to have a significant top formation. So that's, I think, a very significant development. When we look at all of these charts, whether we're looking at the S&P 500, whether we're looking at the NASDAQ 100, whether it is Europe, Japan, China, these are all trends that have lost consistency. Now, when, for example, we look at the NASDAQ, it's right in the region of the trend mean. And the NASDAQ's trend is almost identical to Amazon's. And Amazon has pulled back by approximately 4% in here today, and this is a reasonably large downward dynamic, $76 on the downside, and it's confirming that there is resistance in the region of the progression of lower rally highs. Well, Amazon clearly has a succession of lower highs and lower lows, and that is a downtrend. And until that is broken, first by a higher reaction low, and then by a higher high, then we're not going to have evidence that we're in a demand-dominated environment beyond the very short term. That's, I think, perhaps the most significant thing that we can think about. If a number of people have been writing in and saying that they would like a summary from the beginning of the video, well, that's the summary. I think if there's nothing more important than that. We've had very significant trend deterioration. We've had a very impressive rebound, and this is exactly what we often see. When you get a big decline, you get big rebounds. And that is not enough. What we need to see are higher reaction lows. We need to see that someone is willing to support the price above a low, that they feel that if they don't do that, they're going to miss out on a better opportunity. And that's the I think that is the one thing we just don't have in the market today. What's also, I think, particularly interesting here is that if we look at the US listed Chinese companies, well, it's a pretty choppy index, so I'm going to look at it on a line chart. We can see the depth of the deterioration that has taken place so far this year. And an index going from 3,000 to 1,700 is a pretty significant development. When it is comprised of some of the largest companies in the world, then we should be paying attention. Alibaba is right in the region of the trend mean and was weaker in here today. JD.com is got well has a very similar trajectory to the US listed Chinese companies index, and it was also in negative territory in here today. Baidu, which is the one company where you haven't had executives that have fallen victim to opprobrium from the Communist Party, is also trending down. And there has been no respite in the pace of the decline for some of these Chinese companies. That's one of the areas where we don't have any evidence of a rebound, whereas the vast majority of US companies have at least bounced over the course of the last while. What I think is also quite interesting is that a number of news stories and a number of people have been highlighting the relative strength of the transportation sector and the housing sector and the banking sector from the beginning of the year. And there was a temptation to think that because these have exhibited relative strength for 3 weeks, that that is the extent of the decline. But when we look at the weekly chart for the transportation index, it is right in the region of the psychological 10,000 level. That represented the lower side of the overhead 12-month trading range. And now we're seeing the first evidence of some resistance coming through. Well, I don't think one has to be have a doctorate in chart reading to think that 10,000 is going to be a big psychological level for this index, and it is going to have to sustain a move above it if we're going to get any real evidence of a return to demand dominance. When we look at, for example, shares like UPS, and I need to type the ticker correctly, then it has pulled back. We had the very clear failed upside break, massive reaction against that trend. We've had a period of right-hand extension. We had the breakdown. It was in positive territory in here today, so that is a bit of a standout. But it also has got less, or it has more of its overextension still to unwind, and there is the potential that it is not perhaps going to get all the way back up to that trend mean. When we look at the home builders, I think, and there aren't very many of them in the S&P 500, but what is particularly interesting is that they did have a bounce and now they're pulling back. So that I think is rather important, that this is still a downtrend. We still have a succession of lower rally highs. If, for example, we look at for example, KB Homes, which would probably be representative of the sector rather than Toll Brothers, then this is still a downtrend. And what we certainly had a higher reaction low right at the end of last year, and now we need to see that it's going to hold. So this is still a very challenging environment. And then, of course, we have the banking sector. Well, banks came through with a pretty positive earnings for the fourth quarter, and they've just about unwound all of their overextension relative to the trend mean. Well, the index was down just over 1% in here today. I think it's also worth highlighting that this has been a massive source of inconsistency relative to the previous trend, which, in I think admittedly, was not the most consistent trend to begin with. But there was certainly a pickup in the pace of the advance between 2016 and 2017, and now it has unwound just about all of it. So we're at an interesting point. Now, when we look at the outlook for central bank balance sheets, I had somebody sent me an email today with a number of reports, and what I found particularly interesting is that this chart that I first made 5 years ago is now starting to gain wider appeal. More people have copied this chart, so there are a lot more people now worried about the size of central bank balance sheets, and most particularly because it's been shrinking since March. But it did bounce at the end of last year, and it has been going up since November. So when we now think about the rebound that we've had in stock markets since December 26th, well, the advance in central bank balance sheets led the bounce that we've had in stock markets, and now we're starting to see that the central bank balance sheets are starting to come back down. I created a couple of additional charts because the big question, of course, the one that everybody is asking, is where is the boost of global liquidity going to come from to propel this asset price inflation bull market that's been underway for nearly a decade? Well, there is the potential that it could be China. If China is at the point today where they are getting worried about the slowing pace of economic growth, they may be encouraged to start to inflate the size of their assets again. The problem for China is that while government debt is comparatively small, it is the non-financial corporate sector debt which is a euphemism for property developers and heavy industry, is super overladen with debt. And the biggest source of growth in debt in China has been US dollar denominated debt. As a total of the, or as, excuse me, as a fraction of the total, that's still comparatively small, but it represents a very large portion of the debt that's been taken out by the shadow banking sector in the last few years, in the order of $450 to $500 billion. So that's a major source of a headache for China. Well, we can see that if you redenominate the People's Bank of China balance sheet into US dollars, then it's been going largely sideways since 2014. So that's one point. Then, if we look at the same currency adjusted chart for the Bank of Japan, well, we're presented with a chart that is still rising. And oh, that did not work. Hold on. Need to find my chart. There we go. So when we look at that chart on a longer term basis, it is pushing on to new high ground. So the size of the Bank of Japan's balance sheet went through $5 trillion in just the last week. So those are potentially the two sources of liquidity that I can at least measure, which are contributing to that pop on the upside for global liquidity over the course of the last 3 months. Something that also drew my attention at Jeff Gundlach's Just Markets presentation a couple of weeks ago was that he said there was evidence of the Bank of England starting to renew their purchases of bonds. Well, I suppose it's not so difficult to really understand why they might be doing that, but what we are starting to see is that an increasing number of global central banks are engaged in inflating the size of their balance sheets. Part of the reason for that is because the dollar has been weaker. That's particularly the case for the yen. And the yen was stronger again in here today. So it was stronger by about a quarter of a yen. And now the question is whether that 108 level is going to hold. I think that there is the realistic possibility here that it is China is the epicenter of risk. And it is therefore in China where the greatest potential is for some monetary and fiscal assistance, because China is effectively addicted to growth. And the reason that the Communist administration has been able to hold on to power over the last 70 years is because they've been able to deliver growth and higher standards of living. Well, if they fail in continuing to do that, then that is going to damage the potential for continued social cohesion. So we really do need to pay attention to what's going on in China in terms of that global growth. Meanwhile, the dollar remains reasonably steady against the euro, and the euro has pulled back to test its sequence of incrementally higher reaction lows. So we're at a point where if the euro is going to steady, then this is about where that should be anticipated to happen. The continued strength that we see in treasury prices, but more particularly the speed with which the price and yield have been moving over the course of the last 3 months. If we look at this, the fact that the 10-year yield pulled back from 3.2% to 2.6% in the space of just 2 months, and then we had a very meaningful move in terms of the stock market as well, then volatility has been coming down, but it is rather elevated compared to what we saw, particularly in 2017 and even for most of 2018. So that's, I think, one of the more important points here, that if you look at algorithmic trading and the size of the market that has evolved over the last decade, and you look at all the different strategies, because you can have an algorithmic trading strategy any way you want. But every single strategy that one comes to create is going to have to tackle the issue of how to size the positions. And the way that these systems size their positions is to do with volatility, because they have to have some form of risk metric that is objective. So they use volatility as a way to size their positions. But when stock market and bond market volatility increases, then they have no choice but to reduce the size of their positions. And that's not really a choice. It's built into the system. It happens automatically. Well, if that therefore means that risk parity strategies are In fact, they are withdrawing money from the market. So I found this graphic in here today. We can see, for example, that risk parity has been deleveraging since really the blowout that we had in January of last year. You can also see that the general trend has been down since August 2016. And that is an important fact because there's a very clear correlation here between the trend in terms of leverage in risk parity strategies and the yield curve. I'll put up the chart of the yield curve in a moment. Then, if we look at the equity bond portfolio on a relative value basis, well, this is at, in terms of volatility, it's at close to all, well, I guess, highs we haven't seen since the beginning of last year and then all the way back in 2015. Now, if just remember the shape of that curve in terms of the leverage in the risk parity strategies and then compare it to the this exact same pattern we have on the yield curve spread. And the yield curve was weaker today, or tighter today, I should say, by almost 2 full basis points. So there is the potential here that we're going to start to see some risk getting priced into markets once more. If, for example, the yield curve spread starts to tighten through 10 basis points, that is going to be considered a rather, I think, a risky kind of situation. Then, when we look at high yield, we've had a very impressive rebound over the course of the last 3 weeks, and today was the first evidence of some resistance starting to come through. This rebound has broken the sequence of lower rally highs, but it needs to push back above the trend mean in order to really demonstrate a return to demand dominance. Considering the depth of the decline and the subsequent rebound, it would not be at all surprising that we see a pullback towards the lows. In fact, I think that is perhaps the base case scenario, that it is quite likely we're going to see a retest of the low, and then the big arbiter of whether we are still in a demand-dominated environment is whether those lows hold. That is equally true for the stock market as it is for the high-yield bond markets. I think also when we look at this high-yield spread, the important point is that when it sustains moves above 500 basis points, that's generally when the stock market runs into trouble. However, it also tends to rally for a while before it can sustain a move above 500 basis points. And I think perhaps that's the cycle, the part of the cycle that we're in right now, that it got up to 500 basis points and failed, and now it's come back to the region of the trend mean, and it's probably not going to sustain a move below the trend mean, but rather stabilize here, and that we will see it starting to push back above the 500 basis point level again later this year. So I think that's also worth considering. I think there is also the fact that we are in the third year of the presidential cycle, and that the first half of the year is generally you get a wobble in the market, and usually a significant wobble, before you get the bullish phenomenon being reasserted. So if it might be too much to hope for that we're going to get a very big rebound in the second half of the year, but of course, if this is going to follow the pattern of the third psychological, or excuse me, the third year of the presidential cycle, we can anticipate there's going to be a wobble in the first half. So that's also, I think, worth considering. Then, of course, when we think about the fact that there is a bit of a push and pull going on in terms of the I'm really not doing very well with remembering my tickers in here today. So, yeah. When we look at this chart from Morgan Stanley looking at the potential for interest rate hikes or cuts, the rebound that we've had over the last 3 weeks has resulted in the anticipation of a rate cut in 2020 getting taken out of the market. And we're back up to about a quarter of a percent. So what that is really illustrating is that when the market pulls back, then the bulk of investors conclude the Federal Reserve is not going to raise interest rates. But the better the stock market does, then people are concluding the greater the likelihood is that they will persist in raising interest rates. Well, the market has very clearly signaled that they don't want the Fed to raise interest rates, and that suggests that we're going to see the potential for that rate hike to get priced back out again by the stock market declining. So if we do in fact get downside follow through tomorrow, then that will be a sign of at least near term resistance in the region of the trend mean for the vast majority of indices, because Australia is right there in the region of the trend mean, so is Canada. Then we've had a reasonably impressive rebound in terms of the UK, but you can see clearly on the daily chart that the sequence of lower rally highs remains very much intact. When we look at Europe, it's been a serial laggard, and if China is the epicenter of risk, well, Europe is highly dependent on China for exports, so it has got some significant challenges. When we look at the oil price, well, oil prices were down about a dollar in here today. They were off their lows, and so far it has been able to hold above this $60 area. And when we look at the commodities curve, then you can see that Brent crude is in backwardation just between the first and the second months. It's in contango for the next 5 months, and then it's in backwardation between approximately August 2019 and all the way out to the beginning of 2022. So OPEC taking some supply out of the market has had an effect on the price. Now the question is, how long is it going to be able to hold that if we do get a wider stock market pullback? Then copper prices were down today by 5.5 cents. So that has capped what has been a reasonably important rebound from that $2.50 area, but the weekly chart tells it all that there is still a sequence of lower rally highs, and it is still trading below the trend mean. So it has got some significant work to do if it is going to be able to push back above that level. So we're definitely on the cusp potentially of a risk-off environment once more. And those shares that have had the biggest rebounds and are right in the region of their trend means are probably those that are going to pull back more. China is definitely where you see the clear evidence of relative weakness. But then the fact that clearly domestic US sectors are still trending down, that tells us that the US consumer is not as healthy as people are making out. And I think that is one of the more important points, that this government shutdown, it has been persisting now for long enough that people are starting to worry. And that has the potential to have a negative effect on the stock market. So I think that's an exogenous factor that has starting to begin to be priced into markets. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.